We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me back over there in beautiful New York City, my man Dan Rubenstein. And Daniel, happy new year. Happy 2020. How are you?
I'm great. And I'm especially good knowing that you opened the show without making some sort of 2020 vision crack.
Oh,
that really makes me happy. Because
I'm not even that corny.
That feels like it's going to be a late April, early May 2020 vision. Let's make predictions way too early kind of show. But
we could do a very, very cheesy hindsight's 2020 prediction show,
or I like that as well.
Recap show.
Yeah, I mean, we're recapping our predictions in the hindsight 2020 of our preseason predictions, but we have gotten ahead of ourselves. It is the new year, which means we have a lot of news. We have a lot of draft stuff. We have a lot of bowl games to recap. We are going to be previewing the national championship game on our next episode, our following episode. We're going to deep dive into LSU-Clemson. That's who's
playing? LSU-Clemson. They are playing for the college football playoff national championship on January the 13th, which I will be watching with you live. And
so excited for that.
And as we alluded to on the previous show, we're going to be doing one of our like only in-person shows to recap that national championship.
Yeah.
It hardly ever happens. So we're excited about next week. Hopefully, if you're listening to us now, I know you are, but hopefully you're as excited as we are for this championship game.
Yeah, it should be a terrific championship game. We've had some terrific bowl games that have transpired since we last recorded that we need to talk in depth about. I didn't watch a lot of these as they were happening. I went back and rewatched everything I missed because I was away. I was on vacation. I was going to sleep early because I am an old, but I am fully caught up. And boy, did I say die?
Yeah.
Ty, do I have thoughts?
Oh, I have thoughts as well. Before we tackle all those bowl games.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go crazy with raising the register and saying breaking news or anything crazy
boop,
like that.
Boop, boop, boop.
But a couple odds and ends that we need to discuss. First and foremost,
yeah,
a bowl confidence pool update, Dan.
Oh, I'm ready.
As you know, this year, participants, over 1,300 of them, a great turnout in the Solid Verbal Bowl Confidence Pool.
Mm-hmm.
They're competing for one of three gift cards from our friends over at Roback.
Correct.
We've got a pretty tight race at the top.
Is that true?
It is true. I'm looking at it right now. I've sort of done the math, and by my calculations, an entry by the name of Keith Richards 86. Don't know if it is the Keith Richards.
Let's assume yes.
he's got 37 potential points remaining. If he can close it out, if he gets all 37 of those, he will be the victor. Mm-hmm. The one pick that I am looking at, though, the one entry I'm looking at, is one, I guess it's number 6. Let Down Look Ahead Sandwich, username Z Seely.
Yeah.
71 points remaining, potential points remaining. He can't dethrone Keith Richards if both of them get their two remaining picks correct, but he can leapfrog some of the other ones.
I'm jump up 73. Oh my gosh. Maybe we have some sort of controversial system within ESPN's Bowl Mania. 73 points remaining. But
oh, okay. I got it wrong. Great.
I like the takeover. I like the takeover potential of Z Seely if everything works out. Where are you, Ty? What percentile? How many points do you have?
Yeah. So for me, let me pull up my entry here. I am currently in the 76th percentile and I have 584 points.
I'm in the 87.6th percentile with 605 points. I have 48 points remaining, potentially.
I don't know how many I have left, but suffice to say, you're probably going to beat me.
If you look at the standings, it'll tell you with your entry atop, it'll tell you how many PPR you have.
Oh, there it is. 34 left.
So I'm in a pretty good position to take you down.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's all in good fun. What other news do we have?
Former Solid Verbal guest, Joe Moorhead, has been relieved of his duties.
Were you surprised by this?
I was. As somebody who lives very far away from Starkville, Mississippi, who does not have his finger on the pulse of Klanga Klanga, I assumed he would get at least another year. And I understand the frustration among Bulldog fans with, you know, being outcoached in certain scenarios and looking outclassed in certain scenarios with inheriting, especially what he did on defense. And I know they lost a couple of key cogs from the 2018 defense, but I was under the assumption that in making that hire, that he would be given more time to see what he could do with his own recruits on either side of the ball and with his staff and, you know, improving as a coach. Obviously, there were a number of factors. Maybe there was a personality fit issue, among other things. And, you know, we saw Mississippi State, what they give up a 31-point run to Louisville after going up 14-0.
Right.
Not that bowl games should be all end all, but they are certainly a platform for people to take in your school and your team's ability. And that was not a great showing for Mississippi State. And As we move forward, I suppose Mississippi State is going to need to find somebody that they believe to be a better fit. They believe to be somebody who can prepare a team better than Mississippi State looked at times this season. I don't know who that is, but if you fire somebody after 2 years, you should probably do it in December to maximize your ability to get the best possible candidate for your school and really have a plan in place.
Yeah.
Because if the situation is so dire that Joe Moorhead just cannot be the guy in Starkville, fine. Okay. But they haven't hired anybody yet.
No.
It wasn't a quick turnaround. And the names that have been thrown around, and I'm sure you're going to get to this after I finish speaking, the names that have been thrown around are not like, oh, well, yeah, you have to get rid of Moorhead to get that guy.
Well, that's obviously. That's it. It's always the question of who's next. If you're going to make a move, to your point, what is the plan to move forward? I see a lot of names here that don't excite me. I see Gene Chizik, who's currently an SEC Network analyst, as a potential. Billy Napier, his team is going to play, I guess, on the 6th. So tomorrow, we're recording this on a Sunday.
Maybe there have been back channel chats, and that's a done deal.
Billy Napier would be a nice hire. Had a great season at Louisiana. Mm-hmm. I see here, this is a Clarion Ledger article. I see LSU defensive coordinator Dave Aranda. I don't think that's going to happen. I guess it could, but LSU will pay him handsomely, I'm sure, to keep him on the staff. So a lot remaining to be seen on this front. It did catch me a little bit off guard as well. You would expect, like you said, that maybe they would maximize their window to search for a new coach by doing it earlier.
Maybe it's, Joe Judge? I saw Bruce Feldman tweet out as a potential candidate, the New England Patriots special teams coordinator.
But he's interviewing for pro jobs, too. He's interviewing for pro jobs as well. So a lot to be seen. Jeff Monken, Willie Fritz, Blake Anderson, Mike Leach, saw his name. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. Kind of caught me by surprise. Any other coaching hires or declarations or non-declarations that we want to get to here?
Well, saw J.K. Dobbins, Jonathan Taylor Tailback, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Jerry Jeudy, Chase Young, some pretty significant names. We've had a couple guys say that they're coming back to school, highlighted by, I think, you know, Dylan Moses at Alabama, a big returning Walker Little to Stanford, a really good offensive lineman. Pat Freiermuth will be back at Penn State, your guy.
Yep, my boy.
I think, Liam Eichenberg back to Notre Dame.
Okay.
Rakeem Boyd at Arkansas, who put up some numbers this year. He was good. Alex Leatherwood, key cog on Alabama's offensive line, though I believe they lose a guard to the draft. I saw Savon Ahmed declared, the Washington running back. Elijah Molden from Washington decided to come back. I'm trying to think if there were any other giant names that have decided to come back. But this is still a fluid thing. We don't know Tua. There's nothing official there. Jake Fromm, I haven't seen anything yet. I don't know if you have. Marvin Wilson decided to stay and return to Florida State to be a part of the Mike Norvell era. Some transfers all over the place that we can get to probably in another show.
Sure.
Off-season-wise. Good quarterbacks out there, by the way. Jamie Newman.
Yeah, where does that transfer portal sound? Jamie Newman going in the portal?
Yeah, KJ Costello still out there. Felipe Franks, I saw that, you know, that I think it was Dan Mullen recommended he go to Washington State and get developed by Mike Leach, Anthony Brown, Jet Duffy still out there. So some interesting names that we'll pay attention to as we sort things out, I guess, in the coming weeks once people start landing everywhere. I saw Florida with a couple big transfer recipients. Lingard from Miami, a former five-star running back. So yeah, a lot to sort out. Sean Wade is returning to Ohio State. You'll remember him from, you know, being ejected for targeting, but also a very good corner for the Buckeyes. So that's a key returning piece for the Buckeyes.
The only other thing that I want to point out here is, and I'm sure we'll get to this and talk more about it when we get to the Sugar Bowl, but Matt Rhule has long been rumored for an NFL job. You'll remember the Colts opening like a year or two ago after his first season at Baylor. There were rumors that Colts were interested in talking to Matt Rhule. It seems like the smoke around Matt Rhule to the NFL is not going away anytime soon. He has two interviews set up this week, one with the Panthers, one with my New York Giants.
Yep.
Wouldn't hate the move, Dan. We'll be very excited if they got Matt Rhule. Would feel very sorry for our friends down at Baylor to lose a coach of his caliber. But now that Matt Rhule's season is complete, he is testing the NFL waters and just something to keep your eye on.
Yeah, I suppose Lincoln Riley's name is going to come up a lot.
For the Cowboys,
it perhaps has taken a hit with Oklahoma's performance in the college football playoff. I guess a couple other guys you're connected to. YGM declared a while ago, is it Aloy Gilman? I always forget his first name.
Alohi
Gilman.
Yeah.
He is KJ Hamler declared.
Yep.
That's significant, especially since Justin Shorter announced his intention to transfer.
Yeah, also kind of stinks. Yep.
Well, look, FYI. You see the reclamation project that can happen with Juwan Johnson.
This is a perfect segue. It's a perfect segue into our Rose Bowl recap.
Thank you.
All right. Well, why don't we take it from there?
Okay.
Let's talk about the Rose Bowl. Let's start there.
Okay.
The granddaddy of them all. It was Oregon. It was Wisconsin. It was Oregon 28, Wisconsin 27. This was a close game, Dan. Very close game. Would you call it an exciting game?
Sure. Yeah. Even though there was a lot to be desired in terms of disciplined football and offensive consistency and passing games and general slop, the actual outcome seemed to be in doubt as the game went back and forth and needed a very late, an exclamation point with that Juwan Johnson screen pass to win it for Oregon. Yeah,
I couldn't.
It was in doubt. It was exciting in just a very strange way.
A strange way is a good way to put it. I had a hard time summarizing my feelings on this game because I couldn't figure out if it was exciting because it was close or just not exciting at all, or maybe exciting because of the circumstances or what I was watching. Like, I didn't know how to feel about
it. I think that's what it was. It was exciting because it's, you know, the Rose Bowl winding down. It's
because of the circumstances, right? Not because of the offense. And of course, there were some defensive plays here. As you said, this was an ugly offensive game. Five total turnovers, a lot of defense, We had some special teams. Oregon won with just 204 yards of offense, thanks to four Badger turnovers, three rushing touchdowns for Justin Herbert, and they had that cool one-handed scoop and score. I love that. When they do that, one-handed scoop and score from Brady Breeze, potential all-hair team in 2020, which we can get to a little bit later.
100%.
As the Oregon fan, clearly you've seen Oregon in close game situations.
Yeah.
Throughout the course of this season. Some have gone better than others, but this was another one. This is on the biggest stage. It clearly meant a lot to a guy like Justin Herbert in his senior season. What are your thoughts on this game and how it shook out?
Oregon's defense and special teams, not even really special teams, even though with that, the punt return, because they gave up, it wasn't a punt return. It was a scoop and score missed botched punt snap. Oregon gave up a special teams touchdown. Wisconsin didn't get into the end zone. The Wisconsin offense didn't get into the end zone until right before the half. Oregon's defense did a very good job against Jonathan Taylor, tailback, on the ground. Wisconsin needed a number of fourth down conversions to keep drives alive, which is fine. They got them. That big one on the Jonathan Taylor swing pass was enormous. Wisconsin has a ceiling, and that's what we've seen. And I know they've lost four straight Rose Bowls. Oregon winning this game the way they did. I think our pal Bill Connolly at ESPN had Oregon's offense with a 0% success rate in the third quarter, partially due to the fact that they scored the way they did on that scoop and score. But when the offense was on the field after that opening drive, which went, I think, 75 yards for a touchdown, the combination of Oregon's own predictable and lack of execution, as well as Wisconsin's defense in concert, created a pretty terrible situation for Oregon's offense. And they couldn't really get the ball going on the ground, and yet they remained stubborn in the pistol and trying to go up the gut, as we saw Wisconsin when they struggled to get things going on the ground, up the middle, up the gut. They went to the fly sweep action, which seemed to be really working and jump-starting the Wisconsin offense. So it was a tale of Wisconsin being sloppy penalty-wise and obviously turnover-wise, Oregon taking advantage like a good defense and good team, I suppose, would, and a nice play call at the end to Juwan Johnson to seal things. Obviously, controversy with the offensive pass interference,
right?
With being called on Wisconsin near the end of the game. It seemed to be the right call, but it was also very bang-bang. Also, Wisconsin interfered on that long pass that was called on defensive pass interference on Oregon. So I don't know what cancels what out, but Wisconsin certainly had all of the opportunity in this game to put it away and came up short.
I want to give credit to Chris Fowler, I could for a second here, if we could all just take a knee.
Yeah.
He worked so hard. So hard to make this game feel and sound more exciting than it was.
That's his job.
It is his job. And he did a masterful job of it. Aside of the fact that it's the Rose Bowl and there's a beautiful setting as they pan the Southern California sunset. Mm-hmm. He worked so hard to make it sound exciting. I loved his quote on Jack Cohn. Did you hear this? Did you hear what he said about Jack Cohn? I have the exact quote. I pulled it out.
Yeah.
Quote, not flashy, but certainly more than a game manager. Is that a compliment? What is that?
What's the bar for a game manager then to Chris Fowler? Wisconsin, for all of its good this year, when they were really on, it was Jack Cohn taking advantage of a great rushing attack. And Quintez Cephas being legitimately the only downfield threat that Wisconsin has on the roster.
I know.
But, yeah, it was, I feel for Wisconsin fans because that offense, if Jonathan Taylor is not busting things out, and it was not an explosive offense even with him, it was much more efficient than explosive, was not a fun watch. It was not a fun watch. And, you know, Oregon did a good job harassing a lot of Wisconsin and what they were trying to do on offense and, you know, swarming to the ball and forcing turnovers. But not in terms of offensive football and TV, this was not a remarkable watch.
Fair to say. I love Chris Fowler. Good work, Mr. Fowler.
Oregon in the hunt for a new offensive coordinator, which hopefully can take things in a more consistent, explosive, creative direction.
Maybe Joe Moorhead. Who knows?
Could be. Wouldn't hate it.
Sugar Bowl. Georgia 26. The Baylor Bears 14. A monster game here for freshman wide receiver George Pickens for Georgia. He was the player of the game because he had 12 grabs for 175 yards and a touchdown. So big game for him. Also nice game for Zamir White, who had 92 yards and a score on the ground. And Jake Fromm doing more Jake Fromm things. 20 of 30, 250 yards passing, two touchdowns. Again, no interceptions. Had some really nice throws in this game. Really nice dimes that he was just dropping in on two of those touchdown passes. And outside of that, a really efficient performance by the Georgia offense. Baylor's offense held mostly in check. Georgia took away the run almost entirely.
Yeah.
Something like 2.2 yards per carry for the Bears offense. They put a lot of the pressure on Charlie Brewer. And as a result, the offense held mostly in check. Under 300 yards. Brewer actually got dinged up in the fourth quarter. He wasn't concussed, thankfully. He was a couple weeks ago, but made it through concussion protocol. They took him out of an abundance of caution. Jacob Zeno came in, couldn't really get much going. And I kind of felt like this game went almost entirely the way we expected.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Baylor doesn't score in the first half. They take away the ground game. They take away some of the short passes. And for as good as Baylor's been this year, it's been because of their defense. And that defense can only hold on for so long if they're on the field constantly. And Georgia can say, look, we know Denzel Mims is a threat, and they're good enough to be able to take him out as often as possible, take him away from the offense, and Baylor doesn't have a counterpunch. If Charlie Brewer and Denzel Mims aren't connecting, and Charlie Brewer's not scrambling for first downs, and they're able to keep him in the pocket and confuse him and take advantage of his mistakes, there's not much Baylor can do. Not at this point in their progression under Matt Rhule on offense. We'll see what happens, and I guess he past concussion protocol, but he's taking these hits and he's leaving games in precaution. Like, I don't know how long this can go on for Charlie Brewer and Baylor. At a certain point, like, it's a health concern. It's a health question. On a much more positive front, Georgia looked very good.
Yeah.
And they cared so much more in this game. It appeared just with the spirit and joie de vivre. That they played with that they didn't fully have last year against Texas in this spot. I thought the offensive line did a lot better job protecting Jake Fromm. We saw that flea flicker workout. Very strange to see Matt Luke already prowling the sidelines, taking over for Sam Pittman as the offensive line coach for Georgia. Whatever he did, perhaps in bowl preparation or in, you know, keeping the heads of the offensive linemen on straight, especially given the new look offensive line that Georgia had, given the guys that were sitting out. Good job. I mean, Zamir White ran confidently. Good for him with all the health issues he's had in the past. He looks like a future dude for Georgia. DeAndre Swift has declared for the NFL draft, so that's a new look. And I think you were right to lead off with George Pickens, especially if he can get the sort of mental aspect of football and controlling his temper on the field in check. He is as talented a receiver as the SEC has moving forward.
For sure. And you know what, to his credit, he called it out. He said, you know, I've got some maturing and growing to do. And
we all do, Tyler.
Don't we all? Don't we all? Ain't that the truth, man? But good game for him. A nice story to see him succeed in the way he did, get that trophy at the end of the game. Georgia wins the Sugar Bowl by 12. Elsewhere, the Orange Bowl, we had Florida 36, Virginia 28. Now look, I think there is a tendency to gloss over this one for Florida because they were a pretty heavy favorite because they didn't win the East.
Right.
But 549 yards, 36 points, that is not insignificant because it wasn't all that long ago we were singing a much, much different tune about Florida's offense. What they did this year with a backup quarterback for the majority of the season, having to recalibrate the way that Dan Mullen did. For my money, one of the better stories in college football.
Basically, no success on the ground.
No, none. Well, Michael Piron in this game.
Against Virginia, yes.
Well, Michael Piron in this game had a very good effort here, 138.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think that's entirely accurate.
Yeah. No, they struggled to sort of put forth a complete offense this year, and they still won games. They still exclusively lost to really good teams in LSU and Georgia, and took care of business with a backup quarterback who we not so politely called calm throw Kyle or whatever we called him. And he got the job done. He had a nice season going against a Virginia team that certainly beat up on defense and has its own questions in terms of how high level they could be. They were in this game the whole time.
They weren't. Like, Florida kept them at arm's length for the entire second half. They pulled within one score early in the fourth, but then Florida answered quickly and just sort of coasted to victory. So they weren't out of it. I don't know if they were ever truly within striking distance. It didn't feel that way.
I mean, six points with what, 12, 13 minutes?
I know. It's just,
it's,
I don't know.
It's not a runaway.
Perhaps, it wasn't a runaway train. You're right.
It was the final score is not as accurate as the comfort with which Florida seemed to pull away from this game, but a nice showing because Bryce Perkins has to do it all for Virginia and continuously did all season long. I mean, not necessarily against Clemson, but, you know, this is a good Florida defense that Bryce Perkins was able to find whoever, Hassis Dubois, whoever, in this game. And just at a certain point, he couldn't do everything.
Right.
But I liked the performance. I liked the season. And I liked watching my father-in-law roam across South Florida, seeing Virginia fan after Virginia fan, after asking me what do Virginia fans say to each other, like Texas fans say, hook 'em. He would just go up to strangers at tables wearing Hoos gear and go up to them and say, hey, wahoo wah, good luck. And felt like the mayor of Virginia fandom because he likes knowing secret in-jokes.
Having met your father-in-law.
Yeah.
Didn't he do magic tricks for people at an Italian restaurant?
Yeah.
When we were in Chicago?
Yeah, absolutely. Loves going up to strangers at tables and just being friendly.
Awesome dude.
Yeah.
Love the guy. All right. Citrus Bowl. Alabama 35, Michigan 16. We knew going into this that there were some interesting matchups to watch and that Michigan had enough talent, I think, to offer resistance.
Mm-hmm.
The question was how much and for how long. And that's kind of been the story of coaching against Nick Saban. In this one, Michigan played really well for a half. They led by 16-14 after two quarters.
Yeah, ran well.
Ran well, sure. Second half, more of the same from Alabama. They rip off 21 unanswered. They win going away. Mac Jones, a really nice game, 327 and three touchdowns, no picks. Najee Harris, 136 and two touchdowns on the ground. Jerry Jeudy, virtually unstoppable, 6 for 204 and a touchdown through the air. It's really just a matter of Alabama has a machine. They've got all the talent in the world, and it sucks that they lost Tua to injury, but the other parts don't stop working simply because he's not on the field. They knew how to recalibrate the game plan. Mac Jones played really well against a good defense. And yeah, Alabama, Dan, just keeps doing Alabama things.
This is very true. We've talked about what it takes to beat Alabama, even a down Alabama defense. Michigan was able to find some success on the ground, some, you know, creative play. Giles Jackson had a nice day for Michigan, sort of an all-purpose type back. He had a couple carries and a few receptions. But you need more than Shea Patterson. You need that fearless guy connecting with tall physical receivers, which Michigan has. Donovan Peoples-Jones, Nico Collins, Tariq Black, these are talented dudes, but this Michigan offense just wasn't consistent enough from the top to get it done. And I think you were going in the right direction. Mac Jones is just a good quarterback. I mean, he has these incredible weapons and an incredible line. I know all the advantages he has, but he made plays, he made throws, and that's all you can really ask for, and didn't throw a pick, and the Alabama war machine is still going strong, and they opened the game up with, what, an 85-yard touchdown catch?
Jerry Jeudy.
Mac Jones to Jerry Jeudy.
Yep.
And, you know, we talk about scores misleading what the actual game looked like, and I know Alabama pulled away late, but that's what good teams do. So it was, what, 21-16 into the fourth quarter, or deeper into the fourth quarter, and Alabama rode Najee Harris to shore, and it worked out really well for them. They got that late pick, and Alabama, in a game where you would understand if they weren't fully motivated against a good Michigan team, dug deep and found a way to win at the end very comfortably.
It helps to have Alabama's offensive line.
Definitely does.
But that being said, whenever a backup comes in, I like to look and try to figure out, like, does this guy look comfortable?
Yeah, handled pressure.
Does he look like he knows what he's doing, or is he kind of staring at the line in front of him and acting frantic? That was not the case here.
No.
He looked very comfortable, very poised, and the numbers bear that out. 327, three touchdowns, no interceptions, most importantly.
Yeah. Yeah, Alabama down at halftime, but, you know, those scrappy underdogs from Tuscaloosa. I know.
All right. Alamo Bowl, Dan. Is Texas back?
I mean, Texas is back to being Texas. Yeah. They win some games, they lose other games.
Texas is 38. Utah 10.
Guess who just got murdered?
Man, I did not see this one coming. I can't tell if Texas just smoked Utah, or if Utah didn't want to be there, or if it was some combination of both. But Utah could not get anything going in this game. This was all Texas. It was all Sam Ehlinger. He threw for three touchdowns. He ran for another. I was most impressed watching this one back at the pressure that Texas got on Tyler Huntley. It felt like they were constantly in his face, constantly changing the rhythm of that Utah offense. And as a result, the Utes couldn't get anything going. Sam Ehlinger did his thing on offense against a really good Utah defense, mind you. Don't know if it was a bit of a letdown situation for Utah, being so they lost the Pac-12 game. Typically, we don't see that from a Kyle Whittingham team. They're very good in the postseason. But suffice to say, a 28-point win for Texas would prove otherwise.
Yeah, not great in the postseason either last year against Northwestern in the Holiday Bowl. But Utah had every reason to be motivated even after losing the Pac-12 championship game the way that they did, because this is still a high-profile bowl game with everybody watching. This was New Year's Eve, I believe.
This is when this went off.
Yeah,
I think so.
New Year's Eve. So everybody's watching this game. It's in a dome. It's in a big dome. You got Texas fans all over the place. Utah having an opportunity, even with a down Texas, to beat a high-profile opponent. And I think you're right. And I saw some quotes after the game that perhaps Utah didn't take this game as seriously as they should have. But I'm certainly glad we didn't have to watch Utah against LSU.
Yeah.
Right. I'm glad we didn't have to watch Utah against Clemson or Ohio State after, if they don't have the ability to get up for Texas in the Alamo Bowl. And I understand the disappointment, but I'm going to channel some inner David Pollock here. Texas won this game at the point of attack. Texas won this game in the trenches. They protected Sam Ehlinger well. They opened up lanes for Keonta Ingram and Roschon Johnson, and Ehlinger ran well. And defensively, you're right. They swarmed Tyler Huntley. They basically shut down Zach Moss. And Utah is a pretty good program. They're not big time. And I think Brandon Huffman talked about this on signing day. They're trending in that direction in terms of the talent they have. They were missing key guys in the secondary, and Texas was able to take advantage of that. But Utah didn't have the depth. They didn't have the get up, and they didn't have the talent to hang with a 7-5 Big 12 team. And it's great to kill Arizona State and Oregon State and Cal and whoever, but they played Oregon and USC. Washington was relatively close, and now losing to Texas, Utah they have a ceiling. They're pretty good. They're not big time.
The Texas pressure thing really threw me. This is not a team that was good at sacking the quarterback, really generating pressure all year, and they did an outstanding job.
10 points. They didn't get into the end zone until what, the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
This ballyhooed Andy Ludwig offense? Come on.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, Outback Bowl. Minnesota 31, Auburn 24, Dan. Auburn freaking gets me again. Every year, I can't figure out what to do with Auburn in the bowl game.
That's okay. It makes it spicy.
I should have gone Minnesota because of the motivation factor. I should have done it.
No. Auburn tried. They just couldn't really do much.
Tanner Morgan, 19 of 29, but 12 of those went to the man, the myth, Tyler Johnson. He shares my namesake. He's a boy in a man's body. 12 catches.
Just like you, Ty.
Just like me.
Yeah.
204 through the air. 2 touchdowns. He was unguardable. Maybe the most exciting game of the day.
Yeah, this was fun, especially with the way that Minnesota just slowly squeezed the life out of Auburn's defense to win this game with, what, an 8.5-minute drive to ice it?
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. Big deal for the Minnesota program. It can't be overstated enough. A remarkable season for the Gophers to win the bowl game against an SEC opponent. A big deal, PJ Fleck seemingly hanging around another year. Trying to build something up there at Minnesota, and it's cool. It's really cool to see.
As well as he should. I mean, Minnesota played a complete game on offense with, you know, getting some bad Tanner Morgan thrown into this game. Tyler Johnson is just incredible. For as much as we like to drool over Rashad Bateman, Tyler Johnson is now an all-timer for Minnesota. And to also get it done on the ground, which they weren't able to consistently do this year with Mo, was Ibrahim ran a lot better than Rodney Smith, a bigger play guy, at least against a really strong Auburn defense. Bo Nix struggled going downfield. They were not able to be creative enough to overcome what Minnesota was doing on defense. And the Gophers did a terrific job against Auburn on the ground. So if you force Bo Nix to beat you through the air, it's a tough ask with what Auburn has creatively. And, you know, maybe Chad Morris will be a breath of fresh air for this Auburn offense. We'll see if Anthony Schwartz, I saw some stories about him having to decide now between track and football. And that's kind of, I mean, I like Seth Williams, but that's that big play dude for Auburn. If he's gone, I don't know what they look like. So big offseason for the Tigers, but I think the story here is Minnesota, the way they're able to close out this game and the performance they get. I mean, that catch early on from Tyler Johnson.
Just a beast.
Absurd.
An absolute beast.
11-win Minnesota. I mean, there is context to how they got to those 11 wins and what the Big Ten looked like this season. But you know what? It's early January. Who cares? Good for the Gophers.
They beat Penn State. They beat Auburn.
They did.
Those aren't bad wins.
Lost their offensive coordinator to Penn State.
Lost their offensive coordinator to Penn State because he beat Penn State. Yeah. All right. Belk Bowl. Kentucky 37. Virginia Tech 30. The Lynn Bowden Jr. Express train keeps on chugging. He ran for 223 and 2 touchdowns on 34 carries. Also threw the game-winning touchdown pass with 15 seconds left.
Furious comeback.
To give the Cats the win. This was feisty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it started feisty. Chippy.
Feisty start to this one here. A little bit of a scuffle pregame. Mm-hmm. But a cool story, I think, really on both fronts, if you try to put this in context. First and foremost, Lynn Bowden Jr. basically becoming the quarterback, Kentucky having to reprogram its entire offense to fit his skill set. They did pretty well down the stretch, all things considered. So all due credit to him, to that coaching staff. He probably has an NFL future. So I give him kudos for playing in this game, knowing that he was going to take a lick. He had 34 carries.
Yeah. Oh, I think he definitely does. He's too good not to as an athlete. Yeah,
absolutely. So all due credit to him and the Kentucky staff for reprogramming things and putting together just a really positive close to the season. And on the Virginia Tech side of things, look, the way they, I think, circled the wagons and got things going in a good direction after a bit of a rocky start was admirable as well. I think they found their quarterback in Hendon Hooker.
Definitely.
There's a lot coming back next season, and I think a lot of reason for optimism going into the 2020 season. So, didn't win here, was a very close, very fun game, and I think a lot more excitement to come in 2020 for them.
I hope so, because the ACC is thirsty for excitement and quality, and this year did not really give us all that much. Yeah, no. Virginia Tech, you're not wrong. I would say, at the very least, disappointing in Bud Foster's final game to lose to a team without an ability to throw the ball. Lynn Bowden Jr. and his game-winning throw aside, not great. Not a great look for Virginia Tech. Not able to get it done themselves through the air, though finally able to get it done on the ground with some big play running. And still gave the game away. Was not able to get in the end zone in the fourth quarter. And Good for Kentucky for taking advantage. Good for Kentucky for, we'd mentioned this in the preview, they can be pushed around up front in the run game, which they were at times, but they did a good job locking down Virginia Tech through the air and sort of confusing Hendon Hooker into some bad throws. So really strong way to end the season for Kentucky in a very encouraging way.
The Music City Bowl. We had Louisville, 38.
Louisville.
Mississippi State, 28. We already mentioned that Jomo got fired. Mm-hmm. After this game, but Mikhail Cunningham threw for 279 and two touchdowns. He added another 81 on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville stepped on the gas in the second half. They got their eighth win of the season, which if you would have said before the season that we'd be talking about an eight win at Louisville, that would have been a hell of a story. That would have been a bit of craziness. Preseason to say eight win Louisville, especially where they were last year. But the way that Scott Satterfield has come in and made such a dramatic and immediate impact on this program is not to be understated. Louisville could be back in whatever Louisville context that is before long. Very exciting to see them win this bowl game.
Yeah, you know how I feel about Mikhail Cunningham. He's full on good. Mississippi State, after going up 14-0 to give up what they did into the fourth quarter, 31 straight. It's just a rough watch if you're, I'm sure, a Mississippi State fan. We saw Louisville get pushed around by Kentucky on the ground, and the Bulldogs really not get much going from. I know Kylan Hill was hurt. He tried, and he was within reach of a record, but, you know, Klanga not being able to run it at all against this Louisville defense, which is not good. This is not a good Cardinal defense. I think eventually it should be, but this is... You should be able to score more.
Yeah.
And, you know, good for the Cardinals taking advantage of state mistakes and turnovers and everything like that and finish the season. You know, it's a 7-5 year with a bowl win. That's how I tend to view these things. But it's not unique to Louisville. I think there is, at least going into the early offseason and spring ball, every reason to be pretty excited if you're a Louisville fan.
Agree 100%. Nice win for Louisville, 38-28 again in the Music City Bowl. Dan, let's talk about the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl now, if we could.
Yeah, it's time.
As I prepare for this recap, and I'm not making this up, swear to God.
Okay.
It's a windy day here in eastern Pennsylvania. There is a giant barrel of garbage blowing across my backyard.
Oh, Ty.
If that's not a metaphor for this game, I don't know what the hell is. Arizona State 20, Florida State 14. Eight total turnovers in this football game. That includes six by Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got the cold sweats, thinking back to the 2008 Sun Bowl, you weren't alone.
Mm-hmm.
3-0 after one quarter, 9-0 at half in favor of ASU. The Noles, to their credit, came back. They made it 14-9 after three quarters, but then they gave up a field goal. They threw a pick six early in the fourth quarter. And that's what did him in, Dan. Not a particularly fun Sun Bowl to watch.
Sometimes it's really good when the most extreme weirdo in your life finds another extreme weirdo to start a life with and get married or whatever. It was nice to have these two offensive lines and, in case we made offenses, quarantined in the same place during bowl season. This was ugly. Yeah, what ASU doesn't score, doesn't get into the end zone until the very end of the game. 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And still look like the clear better team with what James Blackman was throwing out into the universe and the offensive line play in this game. I guess good for ASU. ASU finished with a strong recruiting class. There's reason for optimism with Florida State moving forward in the Mike Norvell era and what they've been able to do recruiting and, you know, what their offense should look like and what they return on defense. But good that we could get these two teams together to have their little party in El Paso and just move forward.
Move forward. All right. Gator Bowl. Tennessee 23, Indiana 22. Weird game here. Weird close to this game.
Definitely.
Let's say, because Tennessee scored twice within 30 seconds late in the fourth quarter. They were down 22-9. They steal this one off the back of a truck and win by a 23-22 score.
Tennessee got, you know, bad Jarrett Garantano at the start. They had opportunities and he just couldn't connect. I thought a takeaway from Tennessee is how excited people should be for Eric Gray, who looked sensational on the ground, like a new era of Tennessee offense. We'll see if Garantano can develop or if Tennessee goes after somebody in the transfer portal this offseason. Who knows what happens there? But yeah, I thought also the story was Tennessee's defense doing a good enough job against a strong Indiana offense, losing their offensive coordinator in Kalen DeBoer back to Fresno State. They did a good job against Indiana on the ground. They did a good job against IU in the air, through the air, whatever, and still needed everything in the world to come back in this game. So, weird game, fun game, strange ending, and good for the Vols, who have the pieces. If they can get good quarterback play wherever, they should improve upon a 7-5 season via the Tennessee at the end. They should get to 8 or 9 wins next year, presumably. Year three of Jeremy Pruitt. I have a healthy amount of optimism. Not a crazy amount, a healthy amount.
The Red Box Bowl. I really hate that I can't make this joke about Oregon.
Yeah, where's my Rose Bowl championship hat, Ty?
Cal arriving? 35, Illinois 20, 4 touchdown passes for Chase Garbers. Mm-hmm. Makes you wonder about Cal's season, what it would have looked like if Chase Garbers didn't get hurt. I think it would have taken on a much different feel. But yeah, a good story for Illinois to get to this game. I think we both like Cal a great deal going into it. Not going to lie and say I watched a whole lot of this game, but my main takeaway is nice win for Cal, nice cap on the season, and really a story of what could have been if their quarterback did not get hurt.
If their quarterback doesn't get hurt, they beat ASU, they probably beat Oregon, and they definitely beat Oregon State. They lose to Utah, they lose to SC because they lost both of those games demonstrably. Well, who knows where they end up bowl-wise, but yes, Cal has and had a competent offense, if not a pretty good offense. Balanced offense with Chase Garbers and Chris Brown in the backfield when everybody was healthy there. And it's a bummer, but you get Illinois in the Red Box Bowl and beat up Illinois, down a number of players on both sides of the ball. But this wasn't an Illini team who was putting a ton of points on teams or completely shutting them down. It was a nice, improved story for the Illini. And Cal does a great job on defense. I saw Evan Weaver set some records, and it was expected, I guess, would be what I would say. Cal scoring 35 is new. That's sort of a new sensation to me, but I don't think Illinois could expect much given, you know, who they are and who they were missing. So good for Cal, good for Illinois. Hey, sometimes it's just a good story.
In the Liberty Bowl, we had Navy 20-17 over K-State.
Fun, weird game.
Yeah.
Fun, weird game.
Very weird game. We had Cincinnati all over Boston College. We all saw this one coming a mile away, but 38-6 in the Birmingham Bowl. Cincinnati wins. Western Kentucky by 3 over Western Michigan, 23-20 in the First Responder Bowl. And Wyoming by 21, 38-17 over Georgia State in the oft-forgotten Arizona Bowl.
Yeah, well, let's start there. Xavien Valade, they built the whole thing out of him for Wyoming. He's sensational both through the air, big play dude, and on the ground, goes for over 200 yards. Wyoming, I think we both liked Wyoming in this one, in the Nova Home Loans.
That's right.
Arizona Bowl. You mentioned Western Michigan, Western Kentucky, as good a game as the Hilltoppers had on offense. The job they did in coming back and winning against Levante Bellamy and this Western offense, Western Michigan offense, I thought was pretty admirable. Kansas State did a whole lot of bending, but actually didn't break too often against a Navy team that ran all over them. But Navy with that late suffocating drive that ends as the clock hits zero, field goal. Nice win for them. They have some missed opportunities very early on. Skylar Thompson really struggled against this Navy defense, and Kansas State really struggled between, I guess, the 20s against this Navy offense. So 11 wins for Navy after a pretty down 2018. Color me impressed, Ty.
Yeah.
Color me impressed.
For sure.
And the final game you mentioned was what?
Cincinnati and Boston College.
Cincinnati, Boston College. Yeah, BC didn't. I mean, A.J. Dillon's sitting out. They lose. You know, they fire their coach. They're without their coordinator. It's just not going to happen for BC. But Cincinnati, a relatively easy way to get to what? They finished with 11 wins.
11 wins.
Only losing to a playoff team and a New Year's Six team in Ohio State and Memphis. A nice complete win for Cincinnati as they head into next year with a lot of promising young talent. I don't think you mentioned Ohio-Nevada. Ohio, I guess, weathers a late comeback effort, but they jump out to a pretty big lead here. I think they were up 30-9 going into the fourth quarter, and the end of Nathan Rourke's career ends with a win, and the end of Frank Solich and Nathan Rourke's time together ends with Frank Solich being doused in French fries.
Oh, yeah, right.
In the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Tulane, monster third quarter after a sluggish first half, comfortably beating Southern Miss. And as of recording, I think that those are all the games.
Those are all the games. We've got two left. We've got the Lending Tree Bowl, Louisiana against Miami, Ohio. Again, we talked about that one before. Louisiana, a pretty big favorite. We'll have to wait and see if Billy Napier has ties to that Mississippi State job. And then there's the Big Tamale.
Yeah.
Next Monday, January the 13th, it is number one LSU at 14-0. It is number three Clemson also at 14-0. Mm-hmm. They're playing the championship game in New Orleans, so a bit of a home crowd for LSU.
I'd say so.
In the Superdome. Currently, they're a 5.5-point favorite over Clemson, over under about 69.5. Here is our plan. We're going to preview this game about midweek or so. We can't do it yet because all the fun little props that we like to include as part of the coverage, mm-hmm. they're not out yet.
Okay.
So we got to give it a few days, let the bookmakers do their thing so we can have fun with it, hopefully midweek or so.
Sure.
Talk turkey. And then after that, you and I will convene next Monday night to watch the game. And Tuesday morning, bright and early, to recap the national championship.
All right. I'm ready. I mean, maybe this will be our penultimate Tuesday cruise, depending on when we record it. Maybe we'll structure the national championship preview the way we've structured Tuesday cruise.
We could do that.
With various activities.
We could do
to
that.
Figure out how we feel.
It's like a real cruise ship when you've got different activities. You can do like the flow rider pool.
Yeah, we'll do a midnight pizza buffet. We'll have it all. We'll recap the national championship either late Monday night or probably early Tuesday and get that out pretty quickly. And otherwise, we just sail into the off season with an unlimited amount of content.
All right, Dan. Well, that is all I have here.
Yeah.
We appreciate everyone tuning in. Again, Happy New Year. Thanks for stopping on by. We will be with you all off season. So if you haven't yet, please do subscribe. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts. Dan and I are already planning for a huge 2020. We're excited.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of stuff to come. You get have a good Christmas, good New Year's.
Oh, yeah.
Stay up until the ball dropping.
I did make it up until the ball dropped. Yeah.
You did?
I did. I stayed awake.
Oh my God. Look at
I know. Upset of the century.
Was it specifically because you wanted to watch Times Square and just ring in the new year, or were you just like deep in a Wikipedia black hole learning about some spy plane from 1973?
I mean, I'm not above that, and you know that.
I absolutely know that. No, I was out.
No, I did text you Happy New Year around midnight. And
oh yeah.
As you've said before on the show, generally we can tell. We can tell the alertness level on the other side of things based on response times. When I didn't get anything within about 10 minutes, I knew.
Oh,
Dan's out.
I was out. I think I made it till 10-something.
Okay.
Exhausted. Yeah.
That's fair.
I live a very active, exciting life, Ty, that wears me out.
No, I stayed awake. I watched it, but there were plenty of other instances over the holiday break here where I was asleep early. Ask Solid Wife Kate.
Great. I love hearing it.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, we will catch you all in a few days. Hope you're off to a good start in the new year. We'll talk to you soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.